You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Play in Alberta, everything stays in Alberta. Revenues from Play Alberta stay in the province. Can help get the Hen Day built. Lots to discuss in the racing world. I guess let's start with the big one if you're a NASCAR fan. Harvick, given the swan song, this will be his last year in racing. So he'll have one last chance to get a title. Colin has been pretty good. Says he wants to. What I don't think a lot of people after a while just wants to spend more time with the fam.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I still vaguely remember when he got skyrocketed. I mean, for people who haven't followed racing, you know, closely or for very long, he immediately took over when Dale Earnhardt was killed. So very unexpectedly moved from the old Busch series, took over his seat. And within, I think it was his second or third race, he posted his first win. I think it was. I can't remember. It goes back a long ways, but you know, he's had a great career. He's you know, done really, really well. Obviously, made enough money that just doesn't have to do it anymore. But interesting, you picked the Harvick news over the Kyle Larson going to the Indy 500 story as the top NASCAR. Do you really think that Harvick retiring is bigger than Kyle Larson running for McLaren at Indy 500?
Well, because he's going to do both races in one day, right?
Well, just the idea that he's going to cross over. Like, I assume that he'll do both with the 500 and the Coke 600.
Yeah,
I mean, finally getting another NASCAR guy to come over and try Indy is just awesome. I'm really, really excited, especially a driver of Kyle Larson's caliber. Like, this is the big one. I mean, when Tony Stewart did it years and years ago, I mean, he was running for championships in NASCAR, but didn't really have the best opportunity always at the 500. He ran really well. But, you know, Larson's going to be in really, really good stuff. So it's going to be interesting for sure.
So what's the biggest challenge for him in that situation? Is it physically, you know, being able to handle that much racing, or is it the mental part and shifting between the two different styles of racing?
Both. He is going, the physical nature of it is going to be tougher than anything. I mean, he's super, super conditioned. The 500 itself is unbelievably physical. You know, the heat demands inside the car and the physical demands from the corners are really, really, really high. But to only have a short amount of time, you basically, like, even if you win the race, you almost can't go to victory lane. You go straight into a helicopter, go straight to the runway, fly straight to Charlotte, back into a helicopter, take IVs as you're flying, and then have to do 600 miles at Charlotte in crazy heat. The physicality in the cup car isn't going to be nearly as bad as what it is in an open wheel car, but the heat at the, you know, after you've already run one race is a real killer. These guys end up just unbelievably dehydrated and very, very crampy and very, very tired at the end of the day. So none of it is easy.
Colin Levinson joins us in the Racing Report, brought to you by Cantorc. And so, you know, those are some pretty big stories in the NASCAR side of things. F1, of course, the silly season goes. Vasser is leaving to Alfa Romeo to go to Ferrari. Andrea Seidel is leaving McLaren, going to Alfa Romeo. And Josh Capito is leaving Williams. Now, they haven't had a replacement yet. Or do they have a replacement in Williams?
At Williams, no, but like, this silly season is all the team principals. Usually it's the drivers that are bouncing around, but this year has been unprecedented that these are the team bosses that are switching around.
Yeah, which is rare. How much of an impact do you think it is? Was this all just strategic stuff? Because you and I talked about this at the end of the year. I thought Ferrari, there was no team better at self-sabotaging than Ferrari last year. Like, some of their 100%. Decisions were just brutal.
Yeah, I mean, if this was in the army, they would be dishonorably discharged for shooting themselves in the foot so many times. Ferrari really had a strategic issue that it just seemed that when they had an opportunity, they just missed it. And it's really tough to put that blame on one person. Mattia Binotto, again, had been with the team forever. really, I thought was doing a good job. Whether they pulled the pin too early or not, Ferrari is not known to be a very patient team when it comes to giving people the chance to overcome some of these things. They just snap their finger, pull the trigger, and away they go. So when, you know, Freddy Vasseur is going to, you know, join there, coming over from Alfa Romeo, again, we talked about this a little bit. It's going to take some time for him to figure out what's going on within the company, make some personnel changes, make some strategic changes, but you just don't know if they're going to work. You do all this with the best of intention. I think that they're kind of shooting themselves in the foot again. At the very least, they're delaying their success by another year or two.
When you look, further into the whole situation with F1, maybe just speak a little bit about the idea of the what Barcelona wants to change their circuit. Do they have to request permission from somebody, or can they each track works independently?
No, they have to. Every change that a track makes has to be approved by the FIA. So what they're trying to do, it for, you know, for people who don't really know these tracks, the last complex at the Barcelona circuit has a chicane. They added the chicane a bunch of years ago to slow cars down because, the technology at the time, they were always afraid that if there was an issue, the result of an accident was going to be very bad. Now the cars are a lot safer, the tracks are a lot safer. That doesn't mean safe, but the percentage risk is much less. So what they want to do is open up the last complex so you can basically come out of the last corner. It's going to be wide open, it's going to be flat, which will give the cars a better chance to draft and use DRS to potentially turn into a passing zone. You know, Barcelona is notoriously tough to pass on. Hopefully they get the approval. It's a relatively simple change. The track is already there. They just have to get the approval to be able to run it, which will make things a lot more interesting. I think, at least I hope so anyway.
Now, moving over to IndyCar, Andretti's teaming up with Wayne Taylor Racing for sports cars coming up, the IMSA sports cars in 2023. And, they got that new mega shop in Indianapolis that they're with new ventures and everything else. Now, IndyCar's plan to expand their rubbering in sessions prior to the races, Colin. Can you explain, what does that mean, rubbering in, and what's the benefit of doing this?
So it's something that they're doing. They've started doing a couple of years ago. Last year in Texas, they created an extra practice session where they gave the teams a set of tires. It wasn't required for teams to go, but if you participated in this session, you had to run a high downforce setup. For teams, it's a bit of a risk because if they make a mistake or something goes wrong, they can, hurt their car before the race. But basically what they try and do, I'll go back half a step. The problem that they have, especially at a place like Texas, is that NASCAR runs there. When NASCAR, especially in the last couple of years, NASCAR started applying traction compound, this basically sticky compound, to help the cars run wider and wider and to provide grip and to create, 2 and 3 and 4 lanes. The problem is the traction compound that NASCAR is applying and the tire compound from Goodyear and NASCAR is not compatible with IndyCar tires. So for IndyCar to run, like, it gets crazy if, you can listen to the drivers talk. They make a mistake and they get out of the groove and all of a sudden, like, it's worse than driving on ice. So what they're trying to do and what they started doing last year is they put cars out with, a special set of tires so teams don't have to use their tire allotment, basically run around over and over for a practice session to apply, Firestone rubber onto the track, which, provides that grip and makes the racing a little bit better. So they're going to be doing that at Texas as well as Gateway, hopefully trying to get some side-by-side racing going on.
Breaking down the world of racing with Colin Livingston for the CanTorque Race Report here on the Gregor Show on TSN 1260. Just a short time ago, Ken Block, a rally legend, passed away, and he had an interesting life. He was one of the founders of, or co-founders of DC Shoes Apparel back in the 90s, sold it, and then turned to his love of racing. So let me just talk about the legacy of Block and kind of his place in the rally car world.
Well, first of all, I'm not really a rally guy, than anything, not because I don't like rally, but rally doesn't make sense in my head. And even watching rally videos makes me nauseous. I just can't, my head just doesn't compute. These guys are such talented drivers. The way that they are, really, really on maximum edge of control with their cars, bouncing over hills, sliding around corners on pavement, on gravel, on ice, all over the place is really impressive. But, my experience is very, very limited. Where I got to know of Ken Block was through the Ken Block Gymkhana series, which for again, people who don't know, was something that he started doing to try and practice rally car driving. So they would go into like an abandoned warehouse, or they would go to a location and set up obstacles for him to drive around, slide around. If you go back and look at the series starting at Gymkhana 1, which is, pretty roughly shot, not really well produced, they just happened to capture a bunch of the stuff that he did going up through the series to where it ended up. Like, it's extremely entertaining, jumping over, trains and helicopters and, racing various things. And they kind of bounce from Europe to America to here to there. Like, it's really well done and it's super entertaining. So, definitely a loss. I mean, everyone was crushed that, this super entertaining, super charismatic guy is lost to the world of racing. Unfortunately caught up in a snowmobile accident. And, I just don't know what the real details are versus, what's being released, because those two things aren't always, simpatico. But definitely a loss for the motorsport community.
Yeah, he was huge. I saw a lot of people across the motorsports were kind of devastated to see him lose his life at such a young age. Colin, great stuff, man. Have yourself an awesome week. We will talk to you next Thursday.
Yeah, just really quick, two things. Drive to Survive coming out now, formally released February 24th. And for anybody who wants to watch live racing, Chili Bowl Nationals is on, and Dakar Rally is being run over in Saudi right now.
Now, hey, speaking of the Chili Bowl, there was car crashes happen all the time. And I know you're not a big fan. You don't like to rewatch, and they're pretty scary. But guy got ejected out of his car. That shouldn't happen.
I've looked at the video again. I am 100%. You are correct. I hate, racing accidents. I hate the crash videos. I don't seek them out. I tend to avoid them, but, as you mentioned, this kid, I watched him a few times when he was like 14, 15 years old. He's been sprint car racing for a long time, this Ashton Torgerson. Relatively innocuous crash. The car did flip, but he actually got ejected from the car. There's a still image of the car coming upside down with his head and part of his shoulders out the top of the roll cage, where that landed on his head. And then subsequently, as the car, continued to spin, he got ejected out of the car. There is zero scenario in the world of racing, especially in a sprint car like that. They're not going that fast at the Chili Bowl. Like, if people look up the video, this is basically a dirt track that gets built inside of a hockey rink or inside of an arena. It's not very big at all. They're not going that fast relative to how fast those cars can go. So seatbelts can't fail at that speed, or, absolutely shouldn't, but he should have been fully restrained in there, that, maybe you get banged up, but I just don't understand. That is something that is absolutely going to have to be investigated. And, like any of these really shocking kind of crashes, hopefully some good comes out of it to prevent a similar incident in the future.
Awesome. Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
You bet. Thanks, boys.